We also believe that this violates the privacy of young women choosing to terminate a pregnancy.
A lawsuit over parental notification. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, the 23rd of November. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Angoon residents vote on recalling their mayor.
If they decide that I shouldn't do the job anymore, I'll honor that and walk away.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
First National Bank Alaska, serving Alaskans' financial needs for nearly a century. Member FDIC, equal housing lender.
And by
the Center for Distance Education at UAF, offering access to online courses from any location. Spring semester starts January 20th. Information at distance.uaf.edu.
Planned Parenthood of the Great Northwest is suing the state in an effort to overturn the parental notice law, which requires underage girls seeking abortions to notify their parents. Clover Simon is vice president of the organization's Alaska chapter. She says the litigation is aimed at preventing the law from going into effect on December 14th while it is being challenged.
We are looking at equal protection, privacy, and due process. The Constitution requires equal protection, and basically all pregnant teens have the same choice to continue a pregnancy or terminate a pregnancy, but young women who decide to continue the pregnancy do not have to involve their parents. So there's no reason to treat a young woman who's deciding to terminate her pregnancy. We also believe that this violates the privacy of young women choosing to terminate a pregnancy. This law establishes so many burdens on them that they can't exercise their rights.
The law affects young women under the age of 18. Simon says the law is vague and makes it difficult on both physicians and the patient. Simon says the law is burdensome on any minor choosing to terminate a pregnancy without notifying her parents.
She has a couple options. The first one would to go before a judge, which is difficult for anyone, let alone a young woman, and explain to a stranger why she's chosen to terminate the pregnancy. And then on the flip side, the judge then has to decide, is she mature enough to make that decision on her own? And if she isn't, then she must be mature enough to raise a child, he's saying. So the judge is going to make that choice for her.
The parental notification law was passed by Alaska voters when it appeared on the primary ballot in August. Those in support of the law say that complications posed by abortion pose a health risk that parents need to be aware of. Bill McAllister, spokesman for the State Department of Law, says state attorneys have the complaint and are reviewing it. He had no further comment at this time. The icy weather systems that shut down schools, government, and other facilities from Anchorage to Fairbanks and beyond continues to dump freezing rain on the region. National Weather Service meteorologist Eric Stevens says Fairbanks is enduring an historic winter rain event.
Rainfall on Monday in Fairbanks was around a half an inch, and we're expecting roughly that same amount here again today on Tuesday, bringing our total for the event here for Monday and Tuesday up to around an inch, and that brings us right up to the historic event from January 20th of 1937 that had 99 hundredths of an inch of liquid. So it's truly historic among the weather records that we have.
The rain has water running over ice-slicked streets, and driving continues to be dicey. Fairbanks North Star Borough Mayor Luke Hopkins also describes the ice storm as a historic weather event and is encouraging residents to stay home. A weather storm warning remains in effect, and the Weather Service's Stevens says the forecast doesn't call for much improvement.
More of this rain and freezing rain. Temperatures down at the ground here are right around freezing. Some areas are maybe not so bad, but there are still very slick spots, too, with the temperatures right around freezing, a degree below, a degree above. That's continuing today on Tuesday. Tonight, more of the freezing rain. Temperatures down around freezing.
Stephen says the rain has not resulted in any serious flooding. He says the snowpack can absorb a lot of water and river levels are low. He says things should begin to dry out later tomorrow, and there's a chance for a little snow on Thanksgiving. Anchorage schools were closed today, and in the Mat-Su Valley, Trooper spokeswoman Megan Peters says the Valley School District is closed also.
So not as many people are out and about. Some people had to stay home and take care of their kids. Roads are a little bit better on the highways today, but the back roads are still pretty slippery and slick.
Peter says the main thoroughfares in Anchorage are less treacherous than yesterday, but the side streets and parking lots are very icy. School officials expressing concern about the side roads and trail conditions for students have decided not to take chances. Icy conditions are a significant safety concern for students who walk to school or to bus stops. The school districts in Fairbanks, Anchorage, and the Matsu Valley will all be closed again tomorrow. With the Thanksgiving holiday coming up, that means the kids are free until Monday. Nana Elder shareholders will be $2,000 richer come next year. The trustees of Nana's Elder Settlement Trust have voted to approve the 2011 distribution. Kevin Thomas, chief financial officer for Nana Regional Corporation, says the trust was formed 2 years ago to pay an annual distribution to shareholders who are 65 years or older.
Settlement trusts are not new for Alaska Native corporations. Several of the Native corporations in the state have settlement trusts.
Thomas says around 622 elders will be benefiting from the distribution. Many elders live on a fixed income. The distribution of $1,500 comes with an additional $500 for taxes, and elders are encouraged to reserve the extra for their 2012 taxes. It is a result of a contribution from Nana Regional, which was approved last week. He says this year's distribution tops previous years.
The distribution this year is the same as previous years, and the distribution in the year previous to that was $1,500 per elder.
Elders on direct deposit will receive their dividends in February of next year. Elders not on direct deposit will receive checks later in the month. Angoon residents are voting today on whether to recall the city's mayor, Albert Howard. The recall petition accuses Howard of exceeding his authority as mayor by entering into a deal to develop hydropower projects on Ruth Lake and Scenery Lake in Thomas Bay. Angoon is a village of about 430 people on Admiralty Island in southeast Alaska. KCAW's Ed Ronco reports.
Angoon has been dealing with Cascade Creek LLC and maintaining federal permits to develop the hydro projects at Ruth and Scenery Lakes. The recall language says those permits cost as much as $3 million each, and that parts of the agreement Angoon struck with Cascade Creek could result in, quote, substantial financial obligations and liabilities, unquote, for the length of the agreements, some 50 years. Earlier this year, the Angoon Council voted to freeze all action on the Thomas Bay projects and asked its attorney to try to void any contracts with Cascade Creek. The private company holds a preliminary permit for another hydroelectric project at Swan Lake in Thomas Bay. Cascade formerly held permits for Ruth and Scenery as well, but has instead been working under contract to help Angoon develop those sites. Howard says a council resolution authorized him to act in the city's best interests, and that the action he took in striking the deals is in the best interest of Angoon. Reached by phone today, he said the recall effort was not a surprise.
You know, that's part of the public process. They're entitled to do that, and I don't have a problem with it. What it does for me is it allows the voice of the people to be heard, and if they decide that I shouldn't do the job anymore, I'll honor that and walk away. But on the flip side of that, I'd like to see the people that have put this petition forward also do the same thing.
That's not likely, says Maxine Thompson, a former Angoon mayor, who says she'll continue to advocate against the Ruth Lake and Scenery Lake projects if the recall is unsuccessful. She says the deals with Cascade Creek happened without enough public involvement, and that it distracts from a hydro project at Thayer Lake, she says could help Angoon more.
We did not really want to have a recall, but that was the last option. We have been attending city council meetings. There's a group of us that have been attending for the last, it's going on 3 years now. And we're all past councilmen. Majority of us are past mayors.
Polls in Angoon close tonight at 6 p.m. This is Ed Ronco in Sitka.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, advocating for homeless citizens in Anchorage.
Municipality has not wanted to balance rights. They've wanted both a short notice period and non-storage, and you can't have both.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The Federal Aviation Administration sets rules for the operation of aircraft in airports and provides services to the flying public. Passengers are influential in making flying safer in Alaska, and when passengers know their rights and responsibilities, aviation is safer for everyone. There's more information online at faa.gov/go/flyalaska or toll-free at 1-866-357-4704. This message is sponsored by the FAA.
A former aide to Alaska Congressman Don Young was sentenced yesterday for taking money in exchange for information from corrupt lobbyist Jack Abramoff. Mark Zacharias pleaded guilty in 2007 to taking gifts from Abramoff and his associates in exchange for insider intel. At the time, he was working for Representative Young on the House Transportation Committee. Yesterday, he was sentenced in U.S. District Court to 12 weekends in jail, 4 years probation, 200 hours community service, and fines totaling $4,000. Zacharias' sentence has been delayed because he was working with federal investigators trying to trap bigger fish. But a prosecutor told a judge yesterday he's no longer needed. Court documents show that Zacharias helped the FBI in their investigation after he was busted, turning over information about two congressmen federal officials won't name. Last week, Representative Young refused to comment to APRN about Zacharias' case and who the congressman might be. No charges are being brought because of Zacharias' information, but prosecutors say it was good. They're blaming the high amount of evidence needed to bring corruption charges against elected officials. This summer, the U.S. Supreme Court limited the scope of what's called the Honest Services Law, which is used to prosecute corrupt officials and executives. Zacharias used to live in Alaska, where he attended the University of Alaska Anchorage and played on the school's basketball team. He could have been sentenced to up to 2 years in prison. Alaska's Mark Begich says his new post on the Senate's Democratic leadership team will give voice to more moderate members of the caucus. Last week, Alaska's junior senator was named to the number 5 slot in the Democratic leadership team.
I think what you have is a leadership recognizing they have to broaden their outlook on what the whole caucus thinks. The newer members and the more moderate members, because the leadership is not necessarily as moderate as I think a large group of 06 and 08 class.
Begich says he didn't seek out the job and doesn't plan on changing his style or message to fit any mold. His title is chairman of the Steering and Outreach Committee. That means he's charged with reaching out to groups both inside and out of the Beltway.
The other part is because it's an outreach and steering committee component, really outreach, that I think it's an opportunity to bring in folks that have not necessarily agreed with the caucus on issues and have our caucus have exposure to folks that maybe have not had exposure to in the full-fledged, or bringing in, you know, business community, or bringing back, you know, we've met with the veterans before, bringing in different organizations that we can have real robust discussion.
Begich says he hopes to use his new post to get differing viewpoints before his fellow Democrats. He cites his pro-development stance and says he'd also like to see a lot of Alaskans included in outreach. And he says his background should bring in business interests.
Business community was not connecting with the Democrats as much. And as a small business person, someone who's been in business a long time, I think they see that as that I can speak the language.
The steering committee is made up mostly of the chairs of major Senate committees, giving Begich FaceTime with some of Congress's most powerful leaders. They meet a few times a month with groups from around the nation. Begich replaced Debbie Stabenow of Michigan for the job, who moved up to the number 4 post. The Democratic leadership mostly remained the same, with Nevada's Harry Reid as majority leader, Dick Durbin of Illinois in the number 2 job of whip, and Patty Murray of Washington as conference secretary. New Yorker Chuck Schumer got an expanded role as the head of a new branch that will work on the Democrats' message. Senator Lisa Murkowski had a leadership role on the Republican side of the Senate, also in her caucus's number 5 slot, but she had to give it up when she ran her write-in campaign. Attorneys for the American Civil Liberties Union and the municipality of Anchorage are waiting to learn the victor of the latest round in the legal fight over the illegal campsites scattered throughout the city. That is, if there is a victor. KSKA's Len Anderson reports.
Last week's skirmish focused on the municipality's attempt to lift the current injunction against the city's ordinance governing police seizure and destruction of the camper's personal property. The ACLU is representing a homeless client whose belongings were seized and destroyed in what the suit charges was an unconstitutional action. Although the city has since modified the ordinance, the ACLU argues the new version is unconstitutional as well. The two parties both presented countering motions for summary judgment before Superior Court Judge Mark Rinder. ACLU's Alaska Executive Director Jeffrey Mittman says through the summary judgment process, the judge's decision could avoid a trial.
The ACLU of Alaska and the municipality have prepared legal briefings, what are called cross motions for summary judgment, where basically each side contends that there are no factual disputes and as a matter of law, the judge can find whether or not the ordinance is constitutional or unconstitutional.
Assistant Municipal Attorney Dean Gates summarized his oral arguments via an email to KSKA. Gates says the municipality is seeking to have the injunction lifted because the current 5 days is adequate notice, and the appeal process could grant the camper as much as 12 days or even longer. Only then would the illegal camper's personal property be destroyed. It's the destruction more than the seizure that's at the core of the dispute. Mittman agrees some cities give as little as 24 hours before seizure.
But what they do at that point is they take all the property in the camp into their possession and storage. So if an individual needs to reclaim it, they have 30, 60, in some case 90 days to come and reclaim their property. That's obviously constitutionally appropriate. It's okay for a government to assert its authority over a piece of land and say, we believe we have the right to clear this land and then to do so.
But the city has repeatedly said it simply does not have the storage space needed for the camper's gear and personal possessions. Mittman's response?
That's where the problem has come up, is that the municipality has not wanted to balance rights. They've wanted both a short notice period and non-storage, and you can't have both. You've got to have some process that balances the rights of the municipality with the rights of the individual.
Mittman says last summer when police arrested an illegal camper on a misdemeanor assault charge, all his possessions were stored. He says the municipality should be consistent with other nuisance responses. In the case of a leaking septic tank or an open excavation, the responsible party has 15 days to deal with the problem. Mittman says legal consistency seems to demand a similar response with illegal campers. Assistant Municipal Attorney Gates says the city's position is that the camp abatement ordinance does not really fall into the same nuisance category. The city describes the ordinance as more proactive than reactive. He says it's what's called problem-oriented policing for crime prevention and can even provide more safety for those people now camped illegally. As for Superior Court Judge Ridner's choices, he could grant one of the party's motions, with the losing party probably appealing to the Alaska Supreme Court. He could set up an evidentiary hearing for the presentation of factual issues and circumstances before deciding. Or Judge Rinder could deny both motions and move the suit toward a trial date. While the judge has up to 6 months to decide, Mittman says he cautiously expects an earlier decision. In Anchorage, this is Len Anderson.
Alaska Lieutenant Governor Craig Campbell says allegations made by Republican U.S. Senate candidate Joe Miller in a state lawsuit are baseless. Miller sued yesterday in Fairbanks, claiming elections officials have improperly gauged voter intent by accepting ballots with minor misspellings. Campbell rejects the notion that elections officials acted improperly. He also says Miller claims fraud and irregularities occurred, but has not provided any examples. Campbell says in a prepared statement that Miller's allegations, if left unanswered, could make members of the public lose trust in a lawful, reliable, and consistent election process.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
the Doyon family of companies working together to build Alaska's future. If you know an Alaskan struggling to find health insurance because of a pre-existing medical condition, encourage them to talk to a local insurance broker about the new temporary federal insurance program being administered by ACHEA, the Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association. The program is for those with qualifying pre-existing conditions and who have been uninsured for at least 6 months. Talk to an independent insurance broker or go online to ACHIA.com. This message sponsored by ACHEA Fed.
Alaska's ferry chief is retiring. Jim Beadle will leave his job as Department of Transportation Deputy Commissioner for Marine Operations at the end of December. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
Jim Beadle started his ferry career in 1973, taking a summer job during college. He went full-time in 1975 and worked his way up to chief purser, first on the Leconte, then on the Malaspina. He moved into Marine Highway headquarters about 6 years ago as operations manager before running the system for the past 2.5 years. After nearly 4 decades with the ferries, he says it's time to do something else.
I love Alaska. I love the Marine Highway system. I love the outdoors, and I really want to get back to spending more time doing what I want to do, which is being outdoors and enjoying the beauty of the state we live in.
He made his decision to retire public Monday and says he was not pressured to leave. Beadle came into the job after a period of change, what some call turmoil. Ridership had dropped, new fast ferries developed engine problems, routes fluctuated, and fuel prices rose. But in the past few years, schedules have stabilized and ridership has gone up. Marine Transportation Advisory Board Chairman Mike Korsmo of Skagway says Beadle helped rebuild public confidence.
I think the system in the last few years has finally settled back down into being a pretty efficient, good system again, and I think Jim's been a huge part of that, so I'm really going to be sad to see him go. It's going to be hard to replace.
The advisory board had been part of the earlier turbulence, in part because some members felt ignored. Jerry Hope of Sitka, who represents Central Southeast on the panel, says Beadle kept members in the loop so they could make informed decisions.
He's just been a real valuable connection for the board to the actual service that's being provided, so he will be really missed.
Beadle told outgoing Commissioner Leo von Schaben and Governor Sean Parnell of his retirement plans a few weeks ago. His replacement will be chosen by the new Transportation Commissioner, Mark Lucan, who moves up from the job of Deputy Commissioner for Aviation. The advisory board will review the appointee, and the governor will have the final say. A former advisory board chairman, Dave Kensinger of Petersburg, says the new ferry chief will face many of the same problems as Beadle.
My concern with the system, and I know Jim's is the rising cost. Every year, everything gets more expensive, and the vessels get older, and it's kind of reaching the breaking point.
Other than continuing funding, the system's next big challenge is construction of the first Alaska-class ferry. The ship, built for mostly shorter daytime runs, was supposed to go out to bid this year. That was held up when the federal government withdrew about half the funding needed for the $120 million-plus vessel. Beadle says it's still worth pursuing.
I think we've done a very good complete job of designing what the people need, building a ship that will provide reliable service and doing it in a way that's as cost effective as we can. My opinion is that boat needs to be built, and however they go about doing that, they just need to build the boat.
The first Alaska class ferry is supposed to take over the Lynn Canal route connecting Juneau, Haines, and Skagway. Future ships could sail in southern Southeast and Prince William Sound. This is Ed Schoenfeld in Sitka.
A former Sitka resident has admitted to murdering her husband 22 years ago and disposing of his body. 45-year-old Jane Reith entered a guilty plea yesterday in Sitka Superior Court to a charge of murder in the second degree. The charge has been reduced from murder in the first degree. Additionally, Reith will no longer face a separate felony charge for tampering with evidence. A word of caution, some listeners may be disturbed by details in this story. KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports.
Jane Reith was scheduled to go on trial for murder in the first degree in October. Instead, attorney John Mark Peterson announced that his client would change her plea and agree to a lesser charge. Jane Reth, who was known in Sitka in 1988 as Jane Colville, admitted to Superior Court Judge David George that she knowingly engaged in conduct resulting in the death of Scott M. Colville, using words paraphrasing the murder in the second degree statute. Reth appeared telephonically from the Lemon Creek Correctional Center in Juneau, where she has been held since her extradition from Illinois in January. Judge George questioned Reth extensively about whether she understood the rights she would be giving up by pleading out, namely, a trial in which the state would be required to prove beyond a reasonable doubt to 12 jurors that she killed her husband. Reth, speaking in a clear and calm voice, responded, "I understand." The state has not shown its hand in the case, which was reopened a few years ago. In previous hearings in Sitka, cold case prosecutor Pat Gullifson has alluded only to taped telephone conversations. The state was represented in this latest hearing by Assistant District Attorney Gene Seaton. Judge George asked her flatly if there was a factual basis for the new plea. She began with the basic facts of the case.
Mr. Scott Colville went missing around April 1988 from here in Sitka. His mother, despite that being his birthday, was unable to get in touch with him. After that date, no sign was ever seen of him again. Ms. Reth admitted to her second husband that the reason he wasn't around was she was responsible for his death.
Seaton went on to explain that there were a couple of other steps. Investigators found Reth living in Illinois in 2007. Seaton says Reth also admitted then to killing Colville and disposing of his body.
She had shot him while he was in bed in a trailer here in Sitka and disposed of his body by cutting it with an axe, putting it in dark garbage bags. At that time, garbage disposal was by incinerator, so no trace was ever found.
Scott Colville's mother attended the hearing, also by telephone. Judge George proposed a sentencing date of March 3rd, a Thursday. She said that would give her time to fly to Sitka. Scott Colville was 26 years old when he died. Jane Reth faces a possible prison term of 99 years and a maximum fine of $75,000. Both the state and the defense will likely call a number of witnesses to participate at sentencing. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at APRN.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Ellen Lockyer and Len Anderson in Anchorage, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau, and Robert Woolsey and Ed Ronco in Sitka. APRN's Libby Casey reported from Washington, D.C. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company,
and by
Fire Island Wind, offering a fuel-free energy alternative to South Central Alaska natural gas. Learn more at fireislandwind.com.
The University of Alaska now offers both a Bachelor of Science and a Bachelor of Arts degree in fisheries. Begin your UAF fisheries degree at any major University of Alaska campus and finish in Fairbanks or Juneau. Learn more at www.uaf.edu/fish. The UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences, educating fisheries and marine science experts in Alaska for Alaska. This message sponsored by the UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.